Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Phil Tiger. Slacker Podcast.
Slacker Podcast. Does that get stuck in anybody else's head? It should not get stuck in my head, the theme tune to my own podcast. Can you imagine how cringeworthy it would be if I was walking down the street singing the theme tune to my own podcast? God, that would be absolutely tragic. Hello, welcome to the Slacker Podcast with myself, Phil Taggart. I hope you're good. I hope you're well. And I hope you're ready for some sweet musical podcast action. One of the very few podcasts out there that you actually get a little bit of music in. As we go further into the depths of artist's career to grab out the early demos and the early moments from their careers to share with you. So you can see what it was like for them, warts and all, at the very beginning of their careers. Some of the demos that you get, like really early ones, are so bad you're wondering, like, how is this person in front of me like famous now? Because like the early stuff just wasn't great. And I think that's quite reassuring in a way for any budding artists or musicians that are listening to the podcast. Things do get better, you know, like with practice you will achieve more. And I guess that kind of leads me on to our next thing. One thing I'm doing on the Patreon now, which I haven't up until recently been doing, is because I've like been in bands and ran record labels and this, that and the other, I'm giving some feedback on songs to artists at the moment over on my Patreon page. So if you sign up for that, you can send me your song. I'll go backwards and forwards with you on email about it. It's patreon.com/theslackerpodcast. Not the Slacker Podcast, Slacker Podcast. patreon.com/slackerpodcast. The link should be below this. There's a link to the Slacker YouTube channel as well. And we have been hunting these podcasts out for the crack this year. Recent ones that you might enjoy. Last week we had Idols. The week beforehand, Daniel Avery. The week before that, Jarvis Cocker, Haim, Leanne LaHavas, Jaden Smith, Bob Geldof, Sleaford Motts. We've had lots recently, loads of really good ones, and I'm getting such good feedback from you guys as well, and obviously getting loads of great feedback from the Slacker community on Patreon. If you enjoy the podcast, feel free to give it a review, because that puts it up the charts and gets it in front of more people's eyes. Which is also like really helpful. There's a lot of good people at Acast that are helping out with the podcast at the moment as well. So yeah, shout out to Mike Wooler there. And I'm really enjoying doing them. I'm kind of taking a little break. I have one that I'm recording this week with Matt from The National, and maybe one or two before the end of the year. But I actually have enough podcasts now to do us up until about the middle of January. So I think I can take a break from recording for a wee while and maybe start again in the new year. But anyway, listen, let's get to today's podcast. It is with Jake Bugg, who has been in the industry for like a good while, probably since about 2012, 2013 by my reckoning. And he started really early. I think he started at 17. So he's still a tender age of like 23 or 24. And he has put out numerous albums at this stage. Like, he has released more music than most people his age haven't even stuck out an album yet, you know? So, like, you know, fair play to him for that. He works hard at it. And, yeah, we kind of talk a little bit about his love of football, how he sponsored Notts County football team, about, like, the music industry in general, what it was like meeting Sly Stallone and Robert De Niro on one of the chat shows. To talk about everything and nothing at the same time, but I think that's kind of the glory of the podcast. He brings in a demo with him as well, which I really enjoyed, which we will hear towards the start of the podcast. And I guess I'll just keep quiet now. Also, in regards to the song thing, I'm doing some live videos that I'll be doing, live reviews on YouTube, which I'll tell you more about in coming weeks. But all the information will be on my social media, at Philly Taggart. And all that's left for me now to do is to give it up to the man, Jake Bug, who is this week's Slacker Podcast, in 3, 2, 1. We got the Slacker Podcast, we got Jake Bug, and from what I can see behind you, like 7, 8, 9 guitars, a Hofner.
Yeah, not all mine, not my guitars though. Just the first guitar I ever had here though, it's just my friend's studio. So
is this, how come the first guitar you've got is in your friend's studio? Did you, like, do you owe money or something? You're like, go and just, like, just take the guitar.
No, it broke when I was very young, and he actually ended up, he got it restored and repaired for me. So he just looked after it for a while, but it's the first one I got. So it's not very big. It's just like, it's more for nostalgia than anything.
Yeah. Big time. Was it one of those like little 3/4 jobbies?
Yeah, exactly. There, yeah, exactly. You don't stay in tune. You can't get a note out of it.
No, dude, not at all. The first guitar I had had like nylon strings. Like, you know when you go to the music department at your school and all those like little Spanish guitars that like aren't very good for actually playing with a plectrum, but like are also worth about a tenner.
Yeah, that's it. I actually ended up buying a classical one, and now I've kind of gone back to it. It's really fun to play, actually.
Are you like down with the finger picking? Have you got that like down, like, because that's something I could never get. Like, it's easy to get it to sound nice, but it's hard to actually master it.
Yeah, it's I guess it depends what you're going for. I mean, I think I'm okay when it comes to more like the folk and Celtic kind of playing, but you know, obviously when it comes to whether it's you know, flamenco or classical or samba, even you know, there's that third finger that that should be getting used, but not confident with it, so it's just yet.
I have seen that, like, in when I've been in like Madrid, and you see somebody coming out at a restaurant and they start busting out the flamenco guitar, and you're like, you are on life on fast forward.
Yeah, it's insane. It's like a totally different way of playing, and yeah, big fan of it, I have to say.
How you doing? Anyway, how's things? Like, what have you been up to this year, apart from the same as all the rest of us? Like, what's been keeping you busy?
Well, I've been quite lucky because I've been doing I was doing some work in lockdown, and I had put the trailer out the other day for the Ron Odino documentary that I've been doing the music for, which has been amazing to do. And obviously I'm a big fan of football. So to have something that keeps me occupied to do with football and music was perfect for me. So it was an honor to be part of it, really. So, but I'm still working on it. So
I saw that. Like, I was doing my sort of like internet sweep, like going like, what are we going to talk about? And I saw the Ronaldinho thing, and I was like, I didn't know that you had got into that sort of soundtrack world. Like, how did that come about?
Yeah, it was, you know, it wasn't something I thought I'd be doing myself either. It was something that came through the guys who were directing it, directed a couple of music videos for me. And, you know, they're friends with my manager and asked if he'd do the music supervising on it. And he'd asked if I'd have a go at doing the score. So I've been doing that, and it's been great because I've had to learn different things, like a bit of classical and jazz to be able to play some of that samba thing. And obviously there's more scorey parts in there with synths and stuff like that. So it's been great to try something new.
I've done like a little bit of music supervision like over the years. Like I did a little 4-part documentary ages ago, and it was really grim topic matter, and I found that it, like, that affected me a little bit. It was because you're watching it over and over and over again. I would imagine, like, if you are watching Ronaldinho over and over again, you're just going to be nothing but inspired, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was one of the great things about doing it was, you know, it wasn't something that I'd ever lose interest in, I don't think. It's like, and, you know, when you get some of the briefs, I can't say what they are, but when you're getting some of the briefs for the scenes, like, you know, it's very easy to picture as well because it's, you know, it's such a important match or it's an important moment in football, and it's just inspiring and to be part of it as well.
He's a colourful dude, is Ronaldinho, and he's got such an interest, like his whole life, even like with the shit that's going on with him at the minute with like the passports and stuff. I mean, it's all like a Hollywood movie.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's pretty much what they've turned it into, to be honest. And so that's why it's nice to be, you know, part of it. And again, it was something I never thought I'd do. But you know, somebody like him is an inspiration themselves. Someone like me, even though it's, you know, it's a different career or whatever, but the fact that he was always had a smile on his face and he loved what he did and he enjoyed it. And, you know, it's great to see.
Have you got like any sort of artists that have turned to soundtrack like heroes? Like, I mean, mine would be like maybe like Johnny Greenwood from Radiohead, who has like literally the soundtrack guy now. Is there any soundtrack artists that you really enjoy or love?
I'm a big Vangelis fan. You know, he did Blade Runner and Chariots of Fire, and he's also got, you know, it's not just those. He's, you know, some of his own studio records are amazing as well. But yeah, I've always loved Vangelis, and I remember watching Blade Runner for the first time, and I was like, why is this music so good? I didn't even know he did the soundtrack for it, and then I looked up, I was like, oh, that's why. And yeah, he's just brilliant, and he was a bit of ahead of his time as well, I think, which is why he's great.
Does that mean that like the album that you've got coming out is like a sort of change of direction? I kind of hate using that term, change of direction, because like, you know, it's the same person writing songs, just that maybe the sound slightly changes. But like, is that like a conscious effort to what you're doing with the record now?
My main priority with this record was really, it was about getting the production right. I felt like, you know, I've made, you know, some okay records, but I've always felt like, you know, and like, you know, if you look at the first record, it had a nice charm to it, but it doesn't sound very modern. And I wanted to kind of bring my sound and my DNA into something that was a little more modern. And so I wouldn't say it's a change of direction. I'd say it's more of an evolution more than anything, I'd like to think. And I feel like, you know, I'm happy with the songs, but I feel like the production that we've got behind these songs have really given it new life and myself as well.
Yeah, you definitely like have sort of stepped back into like the sort of modern sound of like 2020, or even like actually before that, because like, what was the track you did with Camel Fat?
Was it Be Someone?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I couldn't for the life of me see 2012-13 Jake Bugg doing a track with Camel Fat. Could you?
No, absolutely not. And and to be honest, I probably wouldn't like. You know, I like to try new things, but you know, I have to feel in somewhat confident doing them. And with the Camel Fat guys, I listened to this stuff and I was like, I don't know, there was just something about it that it was dark, you know, in terms of its production and the songs and I love the melodies. I was like, and I love my psychedelic and, you know, my dark trippy stuff. I was like, actually, maybe I could do something on this. Uh-huh. And I think it's only like 2 or 3 notes in the whole thing. It's not very, it's just about making it dark as you can and simplifying it really, I guess.
But it's a banger. I mean, and I remember it coming into my inbox or seeing it written down or something. I can't remember. Like I definitely saw it written before I heard it. And I looked at it and I was a bit like, fuck this. I don't think this is going to work. Did you ever see like a collab and you're just like going, nah, I can't. Nah, it's not going to hit play in it. And I'm like, holy shit, this is great.
yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, like, you know, I didn't know what was going to happen. But fair play to those boys. And, you know, Mike DeScala is an incredible producer. You know, we've jammed together, and not only, like, you know, he's done some production of kind of more my things, and he gets some really great sounds, and it comes from a good place. And but yeah, it was something I definitely didn't expect. And especially when I had to go play at the, we had to do the you know, Radio 1 Ibiza. And then I just had to stand with no guitar and like sing along with them while they're DJing behind me. I was like, probably felt a little bit out of place, to be honest, but everyone was having a good time by the looks of it. So
yeah, what do you like? You always have your guitar really on you, don't you? Like I remember, like, this is what I always thought about comedians is like, if you don't know what to do with your hands, you feel like a bit of a bell end.
Well, that's what I felt like. I didn't know what to do with my hands, to be honest. I'm like, do I give it the one arm in the air? Do I give it do I hold the microphone? It was bizarre, but you know, it's like, it's those things that, you know, it's not something I feel confident doing so much, but I think those things push you out of your comfort zone and, you know, help you to, you know, evolve as a person and step out of your comfort zone a little bit. And probably next time I would do it, I'll feel a lot better about it. So,
like all great bands throughout history, at one stage or another in their career, have had to like mime, right? So like, you know, you'll have had like Nirvana going on Top of the Pops and doing it, or the Beatles doing it, and you know, everybody's done it because that's basically how TV works. Because like obviously you're talking about what you're doing with your hands, but you've played every TV chat show, I think, going, like any of the ones that are worth mentioning anyway. What's that like? Because like, how does that work? Talk me through that.
Well, yeah, like some of the ones we do in America are pretty crazy, like, you know, because they're huge, aren't they? And but, you know, the band, we get in there very early. We have to get in there, you know, same time as the crew and stuff, really. And they're just long days. It's just so funny seeing the building up and the sketches and the amount of that goes into these chat shows. And then, you know, and then the whole thing gets presented in the evening. It's crazy. And like, especially when the guests are cool. I think when I did like Graham Norton, I was like sat on a sofa with like, I think it was I know Robert De Niro and Sylvester Stallone with it, and it's just like I'm just plumped in the end. I'm like, what am I doing here? I shouldn't be here at all. So it's like, it is bizarre and funny, but you make some great people.
Did you have any sort of back and forth with Sly Stallone and Robert De Niro?
After the show, yeah, I think De Niro got off, but Sylvester stuck around and like, you know, being the chatty, funny guy he is. And he was lovely. And, you know, I think I was, to my surprise, I think he asked for a photo for his daughter, which I couldn't believe. And I mean, he'd done this photo of me and him together, like with his fist under me chin or whatever. But it's just weird. I didn't get really get into it for any of that.
No, of course not.
I love playing music, you know. It's like, so to have that thing that comes along with it and those nice moments through music is no, really nice.
Well, that's it. Like, it's all like a bonus, and it's only really a part and parcel of a certain style of career. Like, as in, you can't really. This isn't the path that everybody who picks up a guitar will run. Like when you're like a bona fide sort of pop star, like you, that's the sort of circles that happens. I mean, when you went and played Alan, did Alan beat you up? Did she like punch you in the face and be all mean and stuff, as everybody's saying?
No, mate. She was really nice. She was really nice to me. It was like, we were on set. So but she was really, really sweet and to me. And, you know, and it's funny though, like you don't know what's going on sometimes.
No,
do you? But
no.
I have to say, like, yeah, I think, I remember Jay Leno was really nice. Jimmy Fallon's cool. Jimmy Kimmel was really, really sound. And they've all been great to me.
I want to go back to the very beginning about like the sort of music that was playing in your house growing up. Can you remember like what the sort of shared family song was when you were a kid?
There wasn't really a shared family song. It was like, you know, whatever me mum would play, we'd ate. That's usually the way it goes, isn't it?
What was she playing?
Well, my mum, she had quite she had quite a bit of a range of taste, really. I guess she'd go for, you know, she'd play Beethoven and all that, which was great. But then, you know, the Take That CD had come out, you know, and then, you know, when a sister's around for a few drinks, then the Take That CD comes on. not saying anything bad about it, but it just wasn't my cup of tea. Like, you know, they're obviously good songwriters, but it was just funny. There was just records. Yeah, that one. I know she loved a Meatloaf as well, like Bat Out of Hell.
Full
couldn't do
9.5 minute version or whatever it is of Bat Out of Hell.
Yeah, just couldn't do it. Nah. Just couldn't do it.
I mean, I'm with you on that one. Like, I mean, that's it. But I read somewhere, right, and I don't know like how true it is, but like your mom and dad, like I've played music before, or they had recorded music before. Like, what in what sort of capacity?
They never did a gig or anything, you know. It's just like, just I think they had a mate that they who had a bit of a studio in his room basically, and mum did a bit of singing, dad played keys, and that was the extent of it really. They never did any gigs or anything like that. But that, I think that's one why growing up I didn't want to get into music. I didn't like it. I loved my football, and it once I started playing the guitar that I saw a different side to it really, and went on that journey.
I've met people that have done it the other way around, where like a friend of mine, Reggie Snow, he's like a rapper from Ireland, like went and played football in LA on a scholarship, and then got into hip hop and became a rapper off the back of it. If would you give it all up now at 26 if you were like able to sign play up front for Notts County?
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't give it up. But you know, I think, you know, if they were ever really struggling, but I don't think they'll be ever struggling that bad to need someone like me in the team. So, no, absolutely not. I think, you know, I'm doing the thing that I really love, and I, you know, I get a lot of independence and freedom with my career and my choices I get to make, fortunately, as well. So there's that side of it. And, you know, there's always going to be compromises, but no, I wouldn't give it up.
What I've learned from watching the All or Nothing, have you been watching that on Amazon Prime? It's like a documentary about Spurs, and they did a documentary.
No, I haven't. I wanted to start watching it, though. Yeah, it looks good, some of the clips I've seen.
It's great. And I watched the one about Sunderland Till We Die as well. And the one thing that matches up in both those documentaries about the footballers is their lives are, like, fair enough, they get paid a lot of money and they have the adulation, and come Saturday, come Wednesday, come Sunday, it's great. But their lives are very boring, and like in between. Like, I mean, they have to sort of sit about and do nothing, really. And I guess, like, that can be quite similar to tour life, because, like, when you're touring between places, there's not really much you can do, really, is there?
Well, I mean, luckily we can go to the pub and smash as many beers as we like. You know what I mean? the football lads can't do that. So, yeah, there's always something for us musicians to be knocking around doing, lurking around somewhere.
That's a fair point. I didn't like, as soon as it came out of my mouth, I was like, going, yes, they're very similar. Wait, no, they're not. Although, if you were a footballer in the 80s, like, it kind of, you had the best of both worlds, didn't you? You'd be like finishing up your match and going out for a rake of pints, and then,
yeah, exactly. It's a ciggy at half time, isn't it? But no, I guess, you know, when we're on gig days, there's a lot of waiting around, and we can't be pushing ourselves or drinking and stuff before that. So, yeah, on gig days, there's a lot of waiting around in not so nice venues sometimes and things like that. But the pros definitely outweigh the cons, for sure.
Were you any good at football? Like, did you ever, play for a team?
Yeah, I was okay. I played for the county of Nottingham, called City Boys. And some of the lads I played with, one of them plays for Wickham Wanderers now, from my team. So I played at an okay level. It was like the level before academies and stuff. But and then I picked up the guitar, and that was the end of that.
But then,
pretty much.
That led to like a bit of a long way down the line working with Notts County. I say working with them, like putting your name on their shirt. Like that's every kid's dream, is like being able to shirt sponsor their own team. Like, that must have been amazing, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I think, like, the extra icing on the cake was when we're in the Division Two, when we're a professional side, not in the non-league, and I was on the FIFA kit as well, so I'd get them all the way from division four to Champions League, and they're wearing your name, which was but that's you know, when I think about those things, I think I made the right decision. You're not going to be sponsoring Notts County if you're perhaps, you know, maybe playing in the side, are you? So, you know,
it sounds like you're like, it's like if you're the manager's son or whatever, like you've kind of bought your way on, like you.
Yeah. I bought my way on it. Now, I went and watched a bit of training with him today, and it looked, no chance for me.
Too fast, man. Like, all the lower leagues from the Premier League are all starting to catch up. I think they're like 10 years ago, they would have been where they are now, but I feel like they're at, like, basically all the athletes now, all the younger, like, footballers that are coming through are all just better athletes. They're just faster.
No, absolutely. And but, you know, I think, speaking to a few players, one of the interesting things is it's like, you know, I think mentally, you know, maybe younger people are not are finding it a lot tougher because, you know, now you hear stories like, you know, if you shout at a young kid when he's coming up through the ranks, that, you know, sometimes they can break down and it can be hard for him. And so even though they're getting fitter and more physical, it's, you know, that old school mental side of it's kind of good. Maybe that's a good thing though in the end. So
yeah, that's true. Like, I mean, you see like people like Ferguson and like Mourinho kind of having to change tact, like, to deal with millennials, really, I guess. Like, I've had people in my career that have been able to like talk to me in a real serious way of like basically tell me to like ship up or like, you know, like pull my shit together. Have you had that person in your life, whether it's like a manager, a family member, a friend? Like, have you ever had somebody that's just been like going, they're the person that like basically lays the law down?
To be honest, mate, no, probably not. I've kind of always been quite independent myself, to be honest. And like, you know, I'd never allow anyone, you know, I put more pressure on myself, you know, than anyone could, I think. So that's kind of my drive. And I just, yeah, I don't like to rely on anybody else. And I don't like, and I also don't like being told what to do, like most people as well. So.
Yeah, I hear that. I definitely hear that. So the first guitar that you have is behind your head. What was the first show that you played it at, or the first show you ever played?
The first show I ever did was a school concert. And to be honest, it was a talent show at the school concert. I was about 14. And whenever I do get nervous before any gig, I just remember that gig.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Because there's nothing scarier than going up in front of your school and your classmates and having to play a guitar on your own. And yeah, just, I don't think anything will compete with that on a fear factor level. And it was probably that one. It wasn't really a gig. It was one song, but I'll count it. There was more than 100 people there. So,
oh, dude, that's definitely a gig. And that's definitely
just because it was at school.
It's worthy of shitting yourself out as well. What song did you play?
I think I played Vincent by Don McLean, I think. And I think I messed up the beginning as well, which didn't help.
Well, isn't are the opening lyrics to that not Starry, Starry Night?
Yeah, so that's what I was doing. And he plays it on the string, do 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 do, but I'd started on the wrong string. So like, and then I sang the wrong melody, like, Starry, Starry Night.
Yeah, because that was in The Simpsons, like, wasn't it? Like that.
Yeah, that's how I discovered it. It was in one of those episodes. I think it's where he's nicking the badges off the cars and stuff.
Yeah, like I look after and work with a young punk band from Ireland, and they're like, what, 20, 21? And they're called Touts. And I was chatting to them like about how they got into music, and the lead singer who writes all the songs, great, incredible songwriter, like really fucking fresh shit. Like, and he just like turned to me and was like, "Going, I got into it from Guitar Hero. I heard Rolling Stones, Painted Black." And I was just like, what? I feel so old.
Mate, like I grew up playing Guitar Hero 2 and 3. And actually like, because I'm back in my hometown now, but it's still at my mum's, so I had a little blast on it the other day. And I found a lot of songs at like 13, 14 through Guitaro. It was pretty good for definitely discovering music, I think. Pretty cool game.
Can you, like, are you still good at Guitar Hero? Like, is it not really embarrassing if you're actually playing in front of like those big stadiums and you come back and do Guitar Hero where you're pretending to do it and you mess it up?
Yeah, I know, but I don't like to blow my head trumpet, but I can't do every song, but I can do a few songs on expert. So like, I'm not as good as I used to be. I've lost a lot of it from when I was a kid, but I can still do a few songs.
What's the hard one? Like, I feel like it would probably be like Dragon Force or like Guns N' Roses or something.
I don't think I ever did Dragon Force through the Fire and Flames, wasn't it? I couldn't do that on Expert. I did it on Hard, but Expert was too much. But I did manage Freebird on Expert on Guitar Hero too.
Full solo?
What's that?
Full guitar solo?
Yeah, the guitar solo. But I think I had to use a bit of star power just to get me through it. It want a 5-star job, if I recall.
Yeah. No, I played in a band, and like, we used to get shouted at all the time, play Freebird. So like, we went back and played the venue, and we know that this one guy just shouts it all the time. So like, we went away for 2 weeks and learned it. So when he did shout it, we waited
for the solo and everything.
We were totally awful at it, like, but we tried to play it. They're like, going, all right, fine, okay.
Did he stop saying it after that?
I think a lot of people stopped. I think everybody just left. They were like, going, no, that's not it. I cut my teeth playing covers. Like, did you do the same yourself before you started sort of writing your own stuff?
Yeah, I think I played covers from the age of about 12 to 14. And there's a lot of Johnny Cash, Neil Young, Beatles, obviously. And
the classics.
And I loved a lot of Green Day as well growing up. Like, it was quite good to learn power chords and stuff. I had a Green Day book, which was quite fun. And till about 14, I was doing just covers, yeah.
Like, you can see a little bit of that sort of Green Day frenetic nature, like in sort of Lightning Bolt and things like that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like, I think, you know, like, it's just an interesting band, you know, to have that success in the 90s and then to come back and have your biggest spell of your career many years later when you're much older. And I think it's just it's a testament to his songwriting abilities, Billy Joe. So, you know, I think he's just a great songwriter, and I think that's why they did so well, I think.
That is interesting. You are right. Like, I don't think about it enough, is that, like, they were a scratchy punk band and came back and became a stadium band.
Yeah, it's like...
but still punk rock.
Yeah, it's like, it's just mental, like, on a huge commercial level as well. But that, you know, that American Idiot record, it was massive when I was young. And from back to finish, it's a crazy in-depth, brilliant album, really. It's like, and I know that you've got that kind of pop funk thing, but you know, there's a few bands that sound like, you got your Blink 182 and there's some 41 and stuff, but I think Green Day started very early, didn't they, in the like late 80s doing that kind of thing. So yeah, they were the kind of forefront of the whole movement, I believe.
They came through the proper punk, like they came through like not the UK punk, but like the sort of DC hardcore, and they loved English punk rock, and they just brought their own thing to it. And then also, like, on top of all these like massive punk songs, they'll have like Time of Your Life, Good Riddance, which is like the song that every kid wants to play on acoustic guitar.
Exactly, it's like, it's amazing that, you know, the arsenal of material they've got, really, from, you know, the heavier stuff to beautiful just guitar ballads, like even on some of those older on like some of the international or super hits or whatever it's called, that Macy's Day Parade. It's just like, got all these, like, it's just bizarre. Just a great band, personally, I think. Underrated, like, in terms of, well, obviously not because they're huge, aren't they? But, you know, I think it, like, maybe a lot of musicians think, oh, it's, you know, pop punk, but really it's great songs.
Big time. Like, I totally agree. There's a new music tastemaker up around your way, who had like a sort of a bit to play with your sort of come up story, and that was a guy called Dean Jackson.
Yeah.
He does like a BBC introducing show in Nottingham. And like, I've worked at Radio 1 for a long time, and like, you know, I kind of play new music all the time, and he is kind of seen as like the wise owl of BBC introducing. Everybody knows that like he's the OG.
Yeah, he's a great man.
So how did that work? Like for sort of your fans that are outside of the UK that don't really get what the introducing thing is. Like, what was the vibe with that?
Well, it's dead weird, like, because I am, you know, I'd actually spend quite a lot of time on the internet when I was like 15, 16, and, you know, looking at, you know, ways to make it in the industry and things like that. And then I came across the website, BBC Introducing website, and it just said, just upload your music and it may or may not be played or listened to.
Yeah.
I was like, what? I've just got to send some tracks and that's that. So I sent him, and then Dean pretty much got back the next day or maybe a couple of days and was like, yeah, I love your track. I'm going to play it on the show. And but he knew he'd played my cousin's band a few times, the Swines. He played them a few times on his show. So he'd asked if I was related in any way, knew my cousin. And then, yeah, he just like kind of just gave me all the support he could from there, really. And
what was the tune?
As much as I could. And he sent me even like, I remember there was a couple of producers from BBC Nottingham who took me down to London because I got invited to the BBC Introducing Masterclass. And even a couple of producers from the show drove me down to make sure I was there and stuff. And just couldn't have asked for much more support, really. It was so nice of them.
That's so rare that happens as well. I mean, like, obviously, like, the BBC, like, and BBC Introducing have that this kind of, like, pastoral care to their, like, community, which is deeper, really, than the music, because they want their... They want people from their area to do well, and they will step in front of whatever buses that need to come to make sure that they do get there, because it's not only reflective good of them and their job, but it's also great for the music scene that they love dearly. So it must have moved quite fast from there, like, because I kind of like remember the sort of beginnings of that story, and it did seem to move quite fast for me. I mean, what was it like for you?
I mean, it's okay. I mean, for me, you know, I live it every day, so it's not like you don't feel how fast it's going for you. I guess from an outside perspective, it may have seemed like that. But to be honest, yeah, I got signed when I was 17, and which was incredibly lucky. And, you know, the age of about 14 when I started writing, I kind of knew it's what I wanted to do, and I was going to do whatever it took to make sure it was going to be the career I had. And so even though it seemed fast, you know, everything was going in a direction that I'd wanted it to. So, you know, I was just happy and enjoying everything, really. So
did you have that, like, that kind of confidence? Like, you know, I came up in around the same time that everybody was like talking about wanting to be the greatest band in the world because of Oasis or because of Arctic Monkeys. Did you have that instilled in you, or like, were you a little bit more, I don't know, world weary around it, or how did you?
No, I'm not. I wouldn't say I was like confident or, you know, like, you know, I'm going to be the best or this. I was just like, I think it's kind of, you know, it's more of a product of my environment and where I came from and the life I had. And, you know, I just like, you know, I want something different. I don't want this. And I'm going to go for it, and I'm going to do what it takes. And it wasn't a mission to be the biggest or the best. It was just like, I want to see the world and I want to do it doing something I love. And
have you
luckily it came.
Have you've obviously seen the world through the lens of a tour bus, and through the flights that you've taken, but have you lived all over the world, or like, have you always stuck close to home?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've recorded in different parts, you know, like if I get the opportunity to stay somewhere or go somewhere for a while, I will do so. Like, you know, I've had time to spend in Australia, and I'll visit my friends in Japan and spend time there. And but what the great thing is about traveling, and even though you don't get to see everything so quick, you get an idea of a place. So if you like it, you get to go back there, and it's great for knowing where to go on holiday, to be honest. So it's that good side to it.
You've never like did the whole like live in LA for a year, live in like New York for a year, like, do you know? It's almost it's almost like the cliche geography map of rock stars and where they go to live, like London for a year.
Yeah, it's true. You know, I live in London now, and it's just, you know, it's just because it's convenient more than anything. But
yeah.
You know, I have spent time in, I can only do a few weeks in LA. I love it, but I can only do a few weeks, and then I start going a bit mad, to be honest. So
Everybody's too nice, and they're too straightforward. Like, it kind of puts me on the back foot.
Yeah, but sometimes I feel like I don't know if they're really being nice. You know what I mean? I don't know how sincere it all is sometimes. That's
yeah, I know what but you mean.
I do love it there, and there are some great people there. I've got some good friends there. So
it's a cool place. You made your second album roundabout there, didn't you? The Shangri-La record?
Yeah, in Malibu, yeah.
Yeah, that was in Rick Rubin's. Like, we haven't even got the debut album yet. I'm shooting all over the place on this one. Like, but like,
that's all right, mate. Go if you get whatever. Yeah.
Rick Rubin. I was talking to LP from Run the Jewels about Rick Rubin.
They're great, aren't they? Run the Jewels. What a quality, man!
What a great band. I had them on the podcast a couple months ago, and I just said to him, like, as a joke, going, "I bet you he's got a picture of himself levitating in the studio," and he was like, "He does. There is actually a picture of Rick Rubin levitating." He didn't work on the Run the Jewels album. I think he would, like, it was kind of, he was there, he would come in and say hello or whatever. But what was the sort of working relationship that you had with him on the second album?
Well, to be honest, I'd been told that, you know, he wouldn't always be there. He wouldn't stick around long. And he was there every day, and he was there for the whole day. And what happened was, I was only meant to record a song with him, re-record a song from the first record, Broken, to put out as the single. And then I went there over there and talked to him and did the song. And then he was like, "Have you got any more?" I was like, "Yeah, I've got a few bits and bobs." And he was like, "Let's do an album." And I was just like, kind of took me and the label by surprise. The label were very surprised at the time. I don't think that they were like freaking out a bit, but
they were probably, you know, like, "Have you got enough songs to like do this?" Or
pretty much. But I'm somebody that I like that pressure of, you know, I didn't have all the songs yet, but now that I've got an objective and a mission to get some songs, and I've got something to strive for. So. Yeah. And the overall experience was just incredible, because the first album was done in like studios around the UK, maybe a bit grungy, maybe a bit dirty. And so to be in California, where the sun's shining, there's just lemon trees growing everywhere. and you've got Chad Smith from the Red Hot Chili Peppers on drums. It's like, it's all a bit funny and a bit strange, but an amazing experience nonetheless.
But yeah, you think that that would be a pinch yourself moment, but at the same time, if you're tunnel vision about finishing a record and tunnel vision about writing these songs, you probably didn't even think about it until like way after.
No, absolutely not, mate. And to be honest, like, it sounds terrible, but, you know, I was about 18, 19 around then, and I didn't really know who Rick Rubin was or anything he'd done, to be honest. I know it sounds bad, but so for me, it was just like, I knew it was an amazing thing. And obviously now on reflection, I'm like, wow, like, I can't believe I got the opportunity to do that. Mm. But at the time, I was just excited and just happy to be in such a cool place and making music. I thought it was great.
Like, you have been like nothing but prolific. I mean, there's four albums out. There's going to be a fifth out very soon. And you're like 26 years old. Like, you are definitely like, you've put down more albums than any other 26-year-old that I know.
well, as I said, you know, like, I didn't get into it for the lifestyle or anything like that. I just solely love making records. I love playing my instrument. I love writing songs. And, you know, but the great thing about making this new record is I've decided, you know, because I was trying to accomplish getting something a bit more modern things, and I've decided to work with loads of different people and try new things. And it's just been really fun, to be honest. And I feel like I've been approaching it with an open mind as well. So I'm getting much better results from it as well, I think.
Have you, like, you must have learned so much from, like, cause you've worked with great people a lot along the way. Somebody that I know quite well, Ian Archer. You worked with him on a lot of the first album, and, you know, you've had great producers and stuff. Like, is this all like, it's kind of like this, is this like an education? Like, is this like university for you? Like, taking all this like stuff in, so like you can become a producer and a songwriter outside of like your own career as a sort of musician and an artist?
No, absolutely. That's exactly how I saw it. You know, working with Ian from the age of 17, all my mates are going to college and things like that. And I, you know, I got to sit and write songs and develop my skills as a writer with people, and like, Ian taught me a whole lot and was a great mentor for that period, certainly. And so that's the kind of way I like to approach things still now is it's just learning all the time. You never stop learning. There's something new. And but also because I'm, you know, learning more and more, I'm getting a better idea of what I want. So I know what to ask for if there's something I really want or I feel like we could do on a track. You know, I know how to get there. But yeah, Ian was such a big help in the early days, and everybody else I've worked with has been great, to be honest. So.
Is there like one piece of advice that you've ever had that like you stick with? Like there's like certain pieces of advice that stick with me in terms of like being a broadcaster or working on the radio. But is there something that like sort of stays with you that keeps you going and keeps you sort of focused or whatever?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you know, it was actually Dean Jackson who told me very early on in the early days that, you know, he warned me that, you know, for every two steps forward, there's going to be a step back. And, you know, sometimes that very much is the case. And, you know, there's been times in, you know, my career and things haven't gone the way that I've wanted sometimes. And that's just part of it. But you've got to pick yourself up and you've got to carry on and try and, you know, get the best out of yourself. You know, I think maybe, there's been a few step backs for sure, but I hope that this next record is more than a step forward, hopefully. So,
big time. And like, how confident are you about the record? And like, what is your sort of metric of success for a record, I guess? Like what makes it something that you're very proud of?
I think, you know, it's hard to tell, you know, there's like, it's like my third record, you know, I thought it was probably amazing at the time. And, you know, on reflection, I'm happy with the songs, probably not so happy with the production and like didn't really come out the way I'd intended. You know, so I think on reflection, you know, I thought that record could have been better. And, but with this new one, it just feels fresh. It feels different. It feels like me, but I feel personally, it feels like a step up. And, in terms of the songs and the production, and but I've you know been trying to work really hard on it. I've worked with loads of cool producers and writers, and so I'm confident it's a good record. But it's not me that has to go out and buy it, is it?
So it's like, that's it. If this was like the old school record industry, like you know, back in the days where they sold nothing but physical, like there'd be somebody from your record label like driving around in a car, like buying them from like the shops in Nottingham. Have you heard stories about that? I heard stories about that back in the day where like in the 90s, there would be like two, like maybe say X band and Y band, there was like 1,000 sales between them and the record label would be sent out to just go and buy them around the country.
I know, yeah, it's shocking, isn't it? And it's like, you know, and it's sad like that. It's, you know, it's you know, I think it's getting more and more difficult for more emerging younger songwriters to come through because, you know, they'll put their record out and it'll do well and then you get, you know, it only takes somebody else who's got a bit more marketing financial means behind them or anything, and that can be the game changer sometimes. And you know, it shouldn't be the way it is, but it's just the way it is.
It is difficult, like, and it's weird, like it should be a little bit more of an even playing field now that there's more money in the music industry, like, because I think like when you were starting out, I remember like the industry felt like it was on its knees because it didn't really understand how to like monetize like the internet, yeah. Really, whereas like now it seems like they're all like all the big major labels seem to be absolutely rolling in it, so like you'd think that like the marketing budgets would be a little bit more fairer, I think.
Well, yeah, you would think so, but I think what usually happens is it kind of, you know, it's the same with the streaming platforms and things, that you know, the people that are being suggested and the people with the most streams are the artists that are already at the top. You know, it's very, you know, I think the amount of songs that get released on, you know, Spotify a day is like ridiculous. And it's just very difficult for, and I think what the, I can't remember what the statement was, but the statement being like, you know, to the people that were struggling to on these streaming platforms were being told to put out more music, but they're already putting out as much as they possibly can. And it's difficult to keep that up, especially when you don't have the financial means as same as some of the bigger artists. And I think the gap between, you know, the top artists and the ones coming through is getting a little bit bigger, which, you know, is unfortunate, I think.
Yeah, I can see that. Like, I think the bigger artists are getting bigger, and the smaller artists are finding it more difficult because everybody can put the, like, in a record store back in like the day, like, not to like go back to the back in my day, because like, I mean, I prefer consuming music better through streaming platforms than I do in a record store, because I can listen to everything I want.
And yeah, of course.
And not have to run around the place and like ask questions and stuff. I just kind of, I like it a little bit more at my fingertips. But at the same time, in that old record store, there was only so much room for so many records on every shelf. Whereas like, you're on there and you might be like a small band with three fans in Kidderminster, but you're also on there up against Beethoven and Meatloaf and Prince and everything.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's hard to cut through.
It's very hard, and I think that's what makes it more and more difficult. And that leads to, you know, venues not being able to survive and things like that. And you know, it really does come back full circle. And I think it'd just be nice to see a little more support, I think, for the artists coming through from the industry itself, especially now. You know, it's not like they're struggling financially, is it? It's no. Like, it'd be nice to give that a little bit back, I think.
Have you ever thought about like mentoring somebody like an artist and sort of teaching them the sort of ways of the world that you've learned? Because obviously, like, the mentoring works so much better when the person is actually closer to their age. Like, do you know, it's always better with getting mentored by somebody that's within 10 years rather than somebody who's like 70 or 80 telling them what to do. Do you know? Have you ever thought about that?
Yeah, it's because, you know, the industry's changed so much. I understand what you're saying. Like, but, you know, you're living in the same industry, aren't you? So it's much easier to kind of get your point across to people your age, I guess. But no one in particular, but, you know, I'm somebody that I might not seem like it, but, most people's eyes, but you know, I do like to, you know, give encouragement. And if, you know, young artists ask me for any advice or if there's any way that I can possibly help, then I'd like to try and do my best, because, you know, it's those kind of things that help you as well. You need, you know, you got to give what you take as well.
Big time, man. So I believe in that. And you're going to regret saying that, because there's going to be a heave of slacker people that are listening to this right now. You're going to be on your case.
Yeah, but that's okay, though. That's all right. You know, it's like, you know, that's what it's for. As I said, the industry's given me so much, you know, and it's, you know, and if there's any way I can repay and give back, then, you know, I'm more than happy to do so.
Well, listen, man, you're definitely giving back in this year, like a year that we need good music more than ever. You've got a new album, which is coming out, and I'm stoked to hear it. And this should be dropping. I mean, we're recording this in what's today's date? The 15th of September, and I think the record's coming out towards the end of the year. So I'm really, really looking forward to hearing it and sharing this with everybody. So Jake, thank you for your time. Thanks for coming on the Slacker podcast, and big love.
No, cheers, mate. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much.